Hello, and welcome to Story Junkies, where we talk movies, books, and television, because we're addicted to story.
Today we're diving into Star Wars, but not just Star Wars, Star Wars The Skywalker Saga.
Dun dun dun.
Which is what I am unofficially calling the nine movies that came out in theaters.
Excellent.
Yes. Nine films exploring the rise and fall of the Jedi, the Sith, and the Empire, and how one bloodline's effect on the Star Wars universe changed the nature of the Force and power itself.
Very dramatic reading.
Well, you know.
I'm author Pete Bauer, and this is my co-host, Baby Falcon.
And yes, people really do call me that.
Yeah, they do.
It's always a joke. Everyone asks, did you do that for Twitter? No, it's my
a
nickname.
Real thing. It's a real thing.
We are so excited to talk about Star Wars today because Star Wars has been a subject on and off for, oh, I don't know, 40-something years. But it's been on our minds a lot because The Rise of Skywalker came in theaters in December.
Yep.
And we have thoughts.
We do.
Like much of the internet. But we've learned a lot from Star Wars. It's been a really big part of the culture. And for me, the number one lesson that I've learned is the importance of knowing the story that you want to tell.
Before you start filming.
Yeah, or for you writing.
That's right. As you know, Star Wars was written and directed by George Lucas, and the original film came out in 1977, and it changed movies forever. It brought back science fiction as a legitimate genre and introduced film merchandising to the world. Star Wars toys, action figures, and video games have filled the store shelves for 43 years.
My entire life, Star Wars stuff has been on the shelf. I've never known a world without Star Wars.
It's amazing. Carrie Fisher actually joked that she signed her likeness away, and every time she looked in the mirror, she had to give George Lucas a couple of bucks.
Well, doesn't everyone?
I think, well, how many times have I bought the original trilogy? More than I'd like to say. I'm a story junkie, so that comes with the territory. Now, as you mentioned, the nine-film Skywalker saga recently completed with a release of Rise of Skywalker. And today we're going to discuss the good, bad, and ugly about this historic franchise. Now, I think there are three constants we can agree on with Star Wars movies, right? There's usually bad writing.
Bad dialogue.
Yeah. Inconsistent acting.
Yeah, fair.
All I gotta say is Anakin in the first movie.
Oof.
Yeah. Jar Jar, first movie.
Okay, well.
Okay, and the last thing.
You know.
Yeah, right. And the last thing is stunning visuals. I mean, all of them really set the precedent for visuals in movies.
I'd like to add another one.
Okay.
Untapped potential. It's my favorite and least favorite thing about Star Wars is just the potential that they build up in the world and in the universe, and it's so cool, and then... Well, I guess you'll have to listen to today's episode to find out.
So I'm usually a plot guy and you're a character gal. Mm-hmm. So whenever I would ask you to help me.
Because we've been working together for years.
Right. And so whenever I'd ask you to help me with my story when I was working on a novel, I didn't know at the time that you were a character person.
Neither did I.
So I would be so frustrated that I would say, well, what would happen here? What do you think about this? And you'd be like, I don't know.
But I did send you pages about what was going on in the characters' world and mind and what they'd be thinking about and what was authentic to their history and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was awesome. But now that we understand the separation, why don't we use our natural focus to talk about Star Wars? From the plot and story perspective, the original trilogy was the most cohesive because it was one story George Lucas couldn't fit into one movie. However, you can tell he still hadn't figured out everything, or else he wouldn't have Luke and Leia kissing each other, which is kind of creepy if you knew from the beginning they were going to be a brother and sister.
It's so gross.
In A New Hope, as a standalone story, that flirtation made sense because you need the dramatic tension between Luke, Leia, and Han Solo.
And it was low-key Luke's crush on Leia that got him to go get Ben and follow the path and...
Right.
But then start the story.
Yeah, then she kisses him in the second movie, and then she's related in the third movie. It's a little creepy. But the good thing is that it has a great villain, a lovable mentor, space magic, young heroes, bad guy turned good. And these elements remain for the rest of the story. With Empire Strikes Back, really it's the best written movie out of the original trilogy. And Return of the Jedi is also really solid from a logistics perspective, although I do have a couple of plot questions about that. But let's talk about character first.
One of the most interesting things that I love about the original, for me, six Star Wars films, because I grew up with the prequels, is that it really told the story of Anakin. Anakin from being this small boy on Tatooine to being one of the most feared Sith in the galaxy, Darth Vader. And you take this small boy and you get to see his devolution into this horrible villain and then his redemption through Luke and through the original trilogy. It's such a fascinating and compelling story. And it was really fascinating, despite all of the flaws of Star Wars, to watch that story unfold. Don't you think?
Well, I do, except here's my problem. George Lucas didn't remember his own story when he made the prequels, because from a plot perspective, there are a lot of logic holes that literally he just had to watch the original trilogy before he wrote the prequels, not to step on his own story, right? His own mythology. In the original trilogy, Obi-Wan says he was mentored by Yoda. There's no mention of Qui-Gon Jinn. None. Obi-Wan has no memory of the droids that he's fought with Anakin in the prequel trilogy. He tells Luke a lie about his father's story, if we are to believe the prequels. He also tells Luke that his father wanted him to have the lightsaber, which is also not true.
Since he thought he was dead.
Right. And from a inconsistency issue, one of the things that fascinates me, and this is where when you start to expand the Star Wars universe, things can get messy. If you look at The Mandalorian, you have Baby Yoda, or the Baby Yoda species, right? And if that is a typical lifespan of a Yoda creature, right? It takes 50 years to be a toddler. Then in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, because Yoda dies in Return of the Jedi, that literally means that Yoda is on his deathbed for the entire original trilogy. And if you also look at the prequels, and again, knowing the whole ickiness of the Luke Leia kiss thing, to let us know, if you were to watch these in logical, chronological order, to know that they're brother and sister before you see that is kind of horrifying. Right? But I will say this about the original prequels. We always say there's always something really good in a Star Wars movie, and that is Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan.
Man, he's just the best. He totally steals the show.
He was so charming. Like, so charming.
Well, and I actually think he did a fantastic job of playing Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan is not really the point of Star Wars. It's Anakin's story for those original six films. So Obi-Wan serves a role in Anakin's world.
Right.
But he's not the focus of the story. And Ewan did such a great job of fleshing out the character with respect to Alec Guinness's portrayal and just doing the character justice, which I really appreciated. And you know, it's interesting. I watched a video with the casting director for The Phantom Menace, and she had said that one of the things they had been looking for with the young Obi-Wan was someone who could mimic the glint that Alec Guinness had in his eye when he was playing Obi-Wan, because there were times, it wasn't a lot, because at the point of the original trilogy, he'd been a hermit for, 50 years at that point.
And one thing we know about Star Wars is when Jedi become hermits, they get crazy. Luke, Obi-Wan, Yoda, they all go off the rails.
And so he'd been a little crazy for a little bit of time and living alone as a hermit on Tatooine, but he still had a glint in his eye. There were times where he would just kind of look at the other characters and you always got the impression that he knew more or that he found something funny that no one else really understood yet. And they were looking for an actor who could match that in the casting of The Phantom Menace. And I think they did a great job.
Well, not only that, but he seemed to be the only actor who could say those lines and get away with it.
Yeah,
because
those were
the rough. Script was so stilted. And, you know, we know these other actors in the movie, in the prequel, are good actors, right? They've done really good work elsewhere. And they couldn't make that horrible, horrible script or scripts work, except Ewan McGregor, who just has that, like, mischievous little grin, like, you guys are playing checkers and I'm playing chess. Looks like he's way ahead of everybody.
So let me ask you a question. We've done a little bit of critiquing of Star Wars, which I think is fair. As people like to say, no one hates Star Wars like people who love Star Wars.
That's absolutely correct. Because it's potential. Again, it's like you said in the beginning. It has so much potential.
Oh, so much potential. And hopefully we have time to dive into all of it. But here's my question for you.
Yep.
What is your favorite part about Star Wars? Not just something you experienced watching as a kid, being the first time you saw laser battles, but the integrity of the story. What's the thing that stands out to you the most?
The thing that stands out to me the most is really the clarification of good and evil and the redemption possibilities. Now, I don't think they're all very well executed or very deep. I mean, Star Wars started out as a kid's movie, right? It wasn't meant to be layered in a lot of subtext or anything like that. But every story talks about flawed people, selfish people, and some of them rise above and actually do something sacrificial to move from the dark side to the light side. And I think that's an inspiring tale. And I think that's kind of why people love living in it, living in that space, besides all the cool effects and everything, is that because in the real world, good and evil are not as clearly defined, and roads to redemption are not as clearly defined. So I think those two things are the most powerful, no matter which trilogy.
For me, it's the premise of the world and the mythology of the world. Like we've been talking about up until this point, the potential of the story. There are so many layers in Star Wars and so many ways that you can dive deeper into the mythology of the world and the depth of the characters and everything that they'd experienced and gone through and what that meant for the Force and for the Jedi and for the Sith. There's so much richness there. And it's really cool that it's totally based on this idea of the Force.
I think it's that potential that makes superfans and the average fan so forgiving and filling in these logic plot gaps, which are so gaping, and excusing them because they just want it to work. And let's talk about balance and the Force. No one in the Star Wars universe seems to understand what balance means.
The Force is the premise of Star Wars, this mystical element that brings life, that is involved in everything that happens, that has a will, though you don't really know what it is. It's the God figure of the Star Wars universe, but unlike the God figure of modern day religions like Christianity and Islam and things like that, this isn't a naturally good God. The Force is a essence that exists in balance. So life and death, push and pull, it's something that requires both in order to be in fullness of itself, which is what you see throughout the entire Star Wars universe, right? Balance in the Force is the premise of Star Wars.
And if you look at the prequel, the Jedi don't seem to understand what balance means.
At all.
The Jedi are in power, the Sith are in hiding, and they think Anakin is going to be the chosen one, the one who brings balance to the Force. And you know what he does? He brings balance to the Force by turning into a Sith. Because true balance is equal Sith versus equal Jedi. Not that the Jedi are in complete control of everything.
No, Anakin really did bring balance to the Force because he destroyed the Jedi and he destroyed the Sith. Technically, Luke had a lightsaber at the end of the original trilogy, but he wasn't really a Jedi. There wasn't a Jedi order. He was just a guy with a lightsaber who had trained with Jedi. And there was no remnants of either one of those powers at the end of the original trilogy. So Anakin did bring balance, just not in the way I think either party was expecting.
You know, there are some obvious plot issues, which I won't get into a lot of them with the last trilogy.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the original six films, which I think is easier because there's such a consistent narrative thread. But since the new films were intending to build on that thread and expand the universe, why don't we dive into those?
In the last trilogy, Force Awakens, Last Jedi, and The Rise of Skywalker. Obviously, they had no idea what they were doing when they were writing those stories from a plot and structure perspective. What I mean is they had not fleshed out all three movies, which is insane to me that you would make another trilogy and not know how the story ends. But if we go under the premise that Rey is a Palpatine, which doesn't make sense because it's a Skywalker story, right? Then some of that would have been layered in somewhere in the first two movies.
I mean, I suppose it's the whole Rey being able to beat Kylo, who's been training his entire life.
Well, right. Well, that makes sense. That would make sense. Like, I'm not saying her being a Palpatine is bad. I'm saying it was not the plan. She didn't mirror or mimic any of the Palpatine forces, like the lightning, until the last movie, right? And she has these parents, which if the writers really thought about, she shouldn't have parents like Anakin. If you're going to have that pure power that Anakin had, she needs to be a Palpatine, like... In the original trilogy, Palpatine admits that he doesn't have the ability to actually save a life yet, and that his mentor, who he killed, actually could create life. So we're guessing that Anakin was created by his mentor.
Which for Palpatine is always interesting, because Palpatine is obsessed with living forever. He's obsessed with immortality and kills the one person who could potentially teach him how to make that happen.
Yeah.
Reckless ambition, man. I feel like that's the warning of Star Wars, both from Lucasfilm and the characters who live it.
Right. But if Rey were a Palpatine, it would make sense that in between all these movies, since the Return of the Jedi, he had figured out how to create life. And so Rey also should be like Anakin because she should be pure Palpatine. And that would make sense where she would have these abilities right away. Because it makes no sense that some little scavenger on a planet can fly the Millennium Falcon and have a lightsaber battle with someone who's been training under a master, right?
Yeah, Rey being a Palpatine did redeem that scene for a lot of people, but I'm going to throw a wrench in the solution.
Okay.
Anakin was a child of the Force, the most powerful Jedi to ever train, and a master of both the Jedi and the Sith who ended up destroying both of them, in essence bringing balance to the Force by just killing everyone. And he still had to train for like 12 years before was a Jedi Master, so...
That's true. Still a plot hole then. If you look at the first movie, Force Awakens, it was obviously a 99% ripoff of A New Hope. It was probably more enjoyable than A New Hope, just from production value and humor, but it wasn't original at all.
Well, they introduced a couple new concepts, which would have, again, been great if they had fulfilled that potential, like having a stormtrooper reject being a stormtrooper. Man, what a story that could have been.
Yeah. The most tragic thing about the new trilogy is Finn's story, because it goes nowhere. It has, again, all this potential.
Infinite potential.
And they screwed up. But anyway, if we go to The Force Awakens, obviously it's a love story between Finn and Rey. He asks if she has a boyfriend. That's the relationship. And then they forget all about that, right? If Huxley, who is revealed as a spy for the rebellion...
Hux is the most boring villain in all of Star Wars.
But if he were... But if he's like really a spy for the rebellion, he should have been a spy in The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're...
But he is not.
At the time where the rebellion is getting real-time data, real-time info on the Starkiller base's status, Huxley is atop a speech podium screaming at thousands of soldiers. Now, that doesn't make any sense if you're going to make this guy this snitch two movies later, right? Again, they just don't think this stuff through. And much like Luke thinking of Obi-Wan as a dad after a couple of hours, Rey has the same problem with Han Solo after a couple of... Apparently, when you're on the Millennium Falcon and you're with a new mentor, you get this lifelong emotional attachment to them because they, when they die, your whole world is destroyed.
That brings up... I'm just really focused on Anakin right now. I'm sorry, but to me... That brings up an interesting point, actually, because if you look at the prequel trilogy, that relationship never really happened. Obi-Wan was very attached to Qui-Gon, but Qui-Gon had been his mentor since he was a child.
Right.
And then Anakin and Obi-Wan never really had that father-son relationship, partially because Obi-Wan was not ready to take on a Padawan, and partially because of all the Padawans in the world, he got the most difficult one in all of Force history.
Who was written to be a whiny teenager as
well. Yeah,
well,
he was a Skywalker.
I know, they're all whiny teenagers.
But if you look at their relationship in the prequels, they never have that. So the person who becomes Anakin's mentor is Palpatine.
Right.
Which makes a lot of sense. But then when they're trying to create that on the light side of the Force, they just rush it really quickly. Like, oh, you're old and nice to me. You are now my father.
Right. It's kind of like the old 30s movies where two people would meet on a boat and then they're desperately in love so that they can be put in peril. Right. It's like there's no like, oh, let's grow the relationship. It's like, no. Oh, hi. Oh, we're in love. Oh, the ship is sinking. You know, it's silliness.
And somehow they're tied to a train track. That's all I think of.
With the old 30s
movies. The old 30s movies.
I don't think that they'd have a train track on a ship, but I get where you're going.
It's a 30s movie. There's going to be a train track.
Especially in the movie serials, there are always train tracks.
It's the most common form of murder in the 1930s.
You know, The Last Jedi, I think, was really interesting because at the time when it was released, Star Wars had big plans to expand their film universe. They hadn't even started TV yet. So I understood why Rian Johnson wanted to break the Skywalker storyline, and he basically did. He's like, you know, the whole theme of that is kill the past, destroy it, move on, right? And so I actually appreciated that because he basically did the Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi in the first half of the movie, and then everything else after that was new. But there were so many plot holes in this movie that it's nearly intolerable to watch for someone like me because I can't stand logic holes. Some of the obvious ones is that the whole mutiny with Poe, right? Ugh. The Laura Dern character, she has four times she could have told him about their plans to just escape the ship and get to a safe place, but she doesn't and allows a mutiny. I counted four different times.
Also, the premise is dumb.
Well, right.
We're two ships floating in space.
Yeah, let's start there. So the beginning, Poe starts an attack that Leia doesn't want, but Leia doesn't tell all the other ships to stand down because apparently she can only talk to Poe. Which makes no sense whatsoever.
Their technology is limited.
It's like the worst plot hole ever. And the resistance bomber is flying away. They can easily explode next to each other and kill everyone, right? That doesn't make any sense. We have Leia, who is Mary Poppins in space.
But hey, we learn why in Rise of Skywalker she's a trained Jedi.
No, true, because they had to throw that in there to make amends.
Wouldn't it be helpful if they actually showed us some of these things that happen?
Yes. Yeah, well, there's that phrase, that legal phrase, facts not yet in evidence, and they did a lot of that in the Star Wars. They just said, no, this is what happened, and you're going to have to trust what I'm telling you. They have the whole with the First Order can't take down the Rebellion ships because they're faster and lighter, even though you're in space and there is no weight in space. And why can't they just jump light speed out to the other side of the planet and come back and kill them? It makes no sense.
Why don't they try to find the tracker? How are they tracking them through light speed? Why don't they try to figure that out?
Right.
Doesn't Sorry. Rose know something about that? I mean, she's the one who said they were active tracking.
Don't start with Rose.
It's not her fault.
I hate that character. It's not her fault as an actress or anything. She did a great job in it. But the whole Finn-Rose thing is a complete waste of time. They're told to find one guy. You can only trust one guy. And they go to a planet. And as you pointed out, they park on a beach after being told not to, and therefore they are wanted. If they just parked in a parking lot.
If they had parked literally anywhere else on the planet.
Right. They would have been fine. Right. But they ignore that. They end up being wanted. They don't get the guy that they want, and they just take some guy who's in a prison cell. And they free some animals, which is, of course, really important when the whole universe is at risk. Anyway, it was the dumbest side thing. But the biggest thing with Rose's character is that Finn's story arc here, he's running from the First Order. That's all he wants to do is run from the First Order from the first time we see him. And he has a chance to sacrifice himself and not run away anymore, but to save them by flying his speeder into the laser cannon. And Rose knocks him out. Now, when she does this, at that point in the movie, condemns what's left of the Rebellion, which I think I counted was 14 people, condemns them to death so she can kiss a guy that doesn't know that she likes him. It's like a school-age crush. I'm destroying the entire Resistance because I think this guy's cute, and I'm not letting him fulfill his potential. Because after that moment, Finn's character had nothing to do.
Well, since you're treading into character water, I think I'll tread a little bit into plot.
Ooh.
Which is that there's absolutely no way them driving the same kind of land speeder she could have caught up with him.
That's actually true. Unless his was just not as fast, you know. It's like going to a go-kart place. Some of them are faster. Because Star Wars is like a go-kart racetrack. But out of The Last Jedi, what I liked plot-wise, what I really loved plot-wise, is an additional aspect to the Force where Rey and Kylo Ren actually shared space, even though they were in different locations. The one thing that drove me nuts with the original prequel was that George Lucas, in the original movies, we had only seen the Jedi in hiding. So in the prequel, it's the first time the Jedi are in power. And you would think that together, when two or three or five Jedi get together, they can do something better or more powerful. No. So the fact that Rian Johnson added that to The Last Jedi, I think, was by far the best thing in any of the last three movies.
Do you know what show did a brilliant job of showing what powerful people can do when they work together?
What's that?
Avatar The Last Airbender.
Ah, right. That's a good example.
For those of you listening to this podcast and have no idea, Avatar The Last Airbender was my favorite show growing up, and I bring it up constantly, so fair warning.
If you don't know about it, look it up. It's a really good show. It's fantastic. A really, really good show. And my last thing about plot with the last movie, Rise of Skywalker, is that all the Skywalker deaths are underwhelming. All of them stink. To me, Ben's salvation is completely unconvincing. He can do these horrible things. Like, I loved at the end of Last Jedi that he was a crazy nut job that just could not kill Luke enough, right? Like, that to me was awesome because it was a real threat. I'm like, wow, this guy is more dangerous than Darth Vader because he is not, there's nothing good left in him. And then he does a couple of things and he's saved. And the other funny thing, just a side note, which is funny to me, besides the Ben and Rey's love story, which I thought was not set up and it was horrible, which I'll let you talk about. But the funny thing to me is that when Han Solo came back in a vision, he was older than when he died, which is interesting because when you die, you stop aging.
Yeah, you think they could have given him a digital face like they did for like three other people.
Right. But I mean, it was obviously, you know, Harrison Ford had aged since The Force Awakens.
It's okay. The audience can be forgiving of that. I think of all the things that audiences are forgiving of, someone aging over time is on the acceptable scale.
I don't want to. Here's the deal. I don't want to age after death.
Well, you will. It's called decay. It's when the animals come eat you.
Well, if I come back as a Force presence, I don't want to look older. That's not the key. I mean,
do you
want to
look like
younger?
You did? That's what I was going to bring up. Do you want to look like you did in your 20s when you were evil?
I wasn't evil, but yes. Well, yes, yeah, I would.
You weren't, but Anakin was.
All right, so talk about the Rey and Kylo Ren love story.
Well, the love story doesn't really interest me that much, to be honest. I was totally expecting it because I think that Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver have good chemistry together as actors. And since they spent so much of the plot putting Kylo and Rey together as adversaries, but they just spent a lot of screen time on them, I was expecting it, even though I wasn't looking forward to it.
Yeah, one scene where he has his shirt off does not a romance make.
No, that it was no.
It was horrible. It was so not developed.
No, it wasn't developed at all. It wasn't something I look forward to or spend a lot of time thinking about. I just knew it was going to happen because I know how filmmakers work, and particularly how these filmmakers work. And they're not really great at love stories, guys. I mean, a 14-year-old fell in love with like a 7-year-old. So that's the basis of this entire
world. Oh, with Anakin
world,
and
with
Padme?
With Anakin and Padme. Like, all of the relationships in Star Wars are weird. We're reaching Shakespearean levels when it comes to this saga.
That is true.
So, didn't really surprise me, but one of the things that did have so much potential and could have been really interesting is the story of Kylo. We never really learned a lot about him. You can guess that he felt a lot of pressure growing up as the son of Han and Leia and the nephew of Luke, and feeling this pull to want power and at the same time wanting to live up to his parents' expectations, and then having dark voices in his head. Like, there's a lot of things you could have played with there. And he always seems like a character that's being torn because he really wants to be more than he is. And when he throws tantrums, it's when things don't go his way. And that can be really interesting in the development of a villain. I think that's really where they were intending to go with this trilogy, whereas the first six films were the story of the rise of a villain and then his redemption. The story of Kylo Ren is really just the rise of a villain that Disney changed at the last second because they didn't think audiences would want to see that story. And I think both of those approaches are correct. I think that if you're going to write the story the way they wrote it, to have the narrative integrity to go, no, this is the story about the rise of a villain. He was no longer, as of The Last Jedi, he was no longer under anyone's thumb. He chose power out of ambition. He decided that he wanted to lead. And so they kind of throw Palpatine in there to kind of give him someone else that he can look up to. But that's not what he did in The Last Jedi. In The Last Jedi, he said, no, this is who I want to be. But Disney's not wrong in thinking that there are a lot of people who don't want to watch the son of Leia and Han and the nephew of Luke grow up to be an irredeemable bad guy. So it goes back to our whole point, which is know the story that you want to tell. There's so much potential in the Star Wars universe. I actually think the Kylo Ren story could have been really fascinating because I love character-driven stories. And all of those different elements are really good backdrop for this kind of rise of a villain story. But if you don't think that's the story that you want the audience to see, then don't go down that path. Pick something different.
And a predefined story also saves you from the headwinds of social upheaval, right? So Star Wars acceptance in the marketplace changed dramatically after Last Jedi. And so they had to move to TV. So where they were going to do a whole bunch of films, they were going to do a Boba Fett trilogy, a Solo trilogy, they were going to do an Obi-Wan trilogy. All that changed. So this universe that they had created that they were about to expand, which I think is what Last Jedi was about, they suddenly had to contract and collapse and resolve in one movie. Again, if you had written the story, planned out the story ahead of time, it wouldn't have mattered what the audience thought because you had a plan, and it would have been part, like we'll talk about in a future episode, like Marvel always had a plan. It would have just fit into the overall movie cycle. The thing that I find interesting to me is out of the original trilogy of which these six movies were based on, the only movies that actually help watch those movies are Solo and Rogue One.
I mean, the prequels do give insight into the character of Anakin. If you want to know how he became Darth Vader, they do that.
Yeah, but those two movies are the only ones that don't confuse anything.
That's true.
Right, like Solo, I know how Chewie and Solo meet. I understand about the Mines of Kessel, which C-3PO talks about in the first movie, about the Kessel Run and the parsecs that he also say in the first movie. In Rogue One, we understand how they got the plans. You know, like, and none of that contradicts anything. The movies that contradict themselves continuously are the movies that take place within the Skywalker saga, which makes zero sense from a plot perspective.
Even from a character perspective, the best way that I can describe the difference between the original six versus this new trilogy, which I don't hate, I don't love the new trilogy, I probably won't watch them again for a really long time, but I don't think they're the worst thing in the world. The best word that I can use to describe it is unmasking. So one of my favorite moments in the original trilogy is the last scene with Vader and Luke, where Vader asks Luke to take off his mask. That's such a significant moment because Darth Vader has been just this force to be reckoned with. He's a man without a face. He's just a mask. He's power. He's darkness. He's terrifying, right?
Right, because you wonder what's behind that mask, right? What does a person look like that is that evil wrapped in that?
And when he takes off his mask, you see he's just a guy. Not only is he just a guy, he's a weak guy because he can't breathe without his mask, right? He's been so broken. He literally needs this armor to survive. He says something to Luke, which is so powerful. When he asks Luke to take off his mask, Luke says, "No, I can't do that. You'll die." And Vader's basically like, "Well, that's going to happen anyway. And just once, I want to look at you with my own eyes." And that is literally the defining line in understanding Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader, because his entire life, he grew up as a slave. Then he was sent off, really did not knowing what it meant to be a Jedi. And then he was manipulated into becoming a Sith. Anakin has never looked at the world through his own eyes. And so saying that he wants to remove this mask, you get to see his humanity, and he wants to see his son who believed in him despite his darkness, where the Jedi never really did, where Palpatine just saw him as a tool to be used, seeing someone who loved him and believed him through his own eyes. That to me is the defining moment, A, of his character, and B, of his redemption. And it's so powerful for us as an audience to see this really powerful guy just be human and weak and frail. But then you look at what happens with Kylo wearing a mask, and it really, to me, defines everything that's wrong with the new trilogy, which is that it could have been powerful, but it wasn't. When Adam Driver was first cast as Ben Solo, Kylo Ren, I didn't really like the casting because it has nothing to do with his performance. I just didn't think he looked like Han Solo's son or Leia's son.
Yeah, it was actually kind of jarring when he took his mask off. And again, it was nothing to do with the actor, but your expectation is he's going to look like Han Solo. And he really doesn't. It was not what I expected, and I don't think a lot of people expected.
And the point that I'm trying to get at is that he wears this mask because he's obsessed with Vader and he wants to be like Vader. Whereas he could have worn the mask because if he looked like his father, he would hate to look in the mirror.
That would be awesome.
That would be really cool. Now, again, I think that Adam Driver is such a great actor that it's really his acting that is the only thing that redeemed the character of Kylo Ren in the new series.
Absolutely.
So I don't disagree with the casting choice at all, but you lose the element of why is he wearing this mask? And it's really just because he wants to look like Vader. And then in The Last Jedi, they destroy the mask because they're killing the past. They're leaving it in history. But then in forcing Palpatine in the final film, they literally piece back together the mask. They're being like, "No, we're doing this."
Yeah, I think that was J.J. Abrams going, "I want my original story back."
But you look at that and go, what's the point?
Right.
You know, the unmasking of Vader was so powerful to me as someone who's watching his story unfold. And even Ben, even though I didn't like him wearing a mask, Ben, Kylo, it could have been powerful and it was just pointless.
Well, and when he took off his mask, just from a acting perspective, you get to then see his face. And in The Last Jedi, from the whole second half, you can see the pain on his face, the struggle on his face of whether he should kill his mother or not. Mm-hmm. You can't see that with a mask, right? Because he doesn't represent Vader. He's not Vader. He's play acting like Vader for his own purposes. So take the mask off and leave it off, because that is more powerful to see the struggle. Or at the end of The Last Jedi, the vitriol on his face, right? That is far more powerful than putting together a mask and forcing it back on the guy, because it doesn't pay off the way you're explaining.
I get there may be people who will be like, well, he's disassociating himself from his identity by wearing a mask, but that just doesn't come across on screen.
Right.
And getting to the ultimate underlying thing about Star Wars that we both love and hate is this unused potential. All of storytelling is an unmasking. You have a story that you want to tell, and you're slowly revealing it to your reader or your audience.
Right.
And so you look at these stories, which of all of the stories I've read, Star Wars is defined by masks, whether it's Vader or Kylo Ren or the Stormtroopers or the Mandalorians. Masks are a very big part of Star Wars lore, and the revelation should have meant something.
Absolutely. And we'd like to know what you think about the 9-film Skywalker saga. What did you like, and what frustrated you, and what is the biggest potential you think was missed?
Thank you for joining us.
Yep. Thank you, and we'll see you guys next time. One other thing. I just think it gets funny that I think the Jedi need to go through their HR manual. All of the mentors, their Padawans, all betray them. Right? Because if you look at it, Yoda was betrayed by Count Dooku.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then Anakin betrays Obi-Wan. Kylo Ren betrays Luke. Is anyone good at this? What is going on?
Maybe the Jedi are evil. Maybe that's the...
I don't know. I think maybe they're just incompetent. Or they need a new HR representative.
Well, we'll bring it up to Lucas.